Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're doing well. Goodness knows which week of lockdown we're on. Is it week six? I think it's week six. I don't know. Every day feels much the same at the moment, doesn't it? I'm super busy. I don't know about you. I feel as though I'm doing a lot, but the days are all kind of mixing into one. However you are feeling right now, I've said it for the last few weeks. I'm a really big believer that you have to kind of own whatever's going on for you, and whatever it is, that's absolutely okay. I'm still meeting people who are thriving, really thriving in all of this, and then others who are really not thriving at all and finding it incredibly difficult. So whatever your situation, I think you just have to be kind to yourself. I think that's kind of the top line right at this moment in time. I am finding that I'm getting quite a lot of messages, some people within the Sober Club who've been sober for a good long time have kind of tipped up, and that voice in the head that says these are unusual times, it's okay to have one drink, and so they're kind of back at day one or whatever. And I think there's a lot of that going on at the moment. And again, this is not about any judgment or about any beating yourself up. Just don't do that. Just hang on to what it is you want. And I think we really are in a stage of playing this tape forward. You know, it's hard right now to do a vision board or to think too far ahead because everything feels so uncertain. But we can think ahead, a month or 2 months, and we can then sort of ask ourselves, where do we want to be? Do we want to be someone who is drinking again if we'd managed to stop, Anyways, I would really recommend that you get some help, get some support if that's you. If you've got those self-sabotaging thoughts going on right now, because that's what they are. It's just the voices in your head saying, "Well, what's the point? I may as well hit the fuck it button. Who cares? I'll start tomorrow." These destructive thoughts that so many of us have. This inner critic that tells us we're not good enough anyway. One of the things that I've been teaching a lot, we've been having regular coaching calls in the Sober Club and group coaching calls, and the thing that constantly sort of keeps coming up is this concept that we can choose our thoughts. We can recognize our thoughts. They'll creep in. the voice will come in that says you may as well have a drink. But we can then look at it and actually acknowledge it and say, well, is that true? And so it's that conscious awareness. On that note, by the way, I've done an interview which I'll bring you very soon with Joe Wilson and Andy Coley, who are NLP trainers, neuro-linguistic programming. And it's such a helpful interview. NLP is so brilliant for people ditching the booze. I've done a little bit of training and I'm going to do some more because I'm really convinced that there are so many simple, really, really quite easy to implement techniques that work super well in sort of personal development, but in changing behaviors, unwanted habits, really work brilliantly. And also with relationships, that's been the other thing that I've noticed. People are having they're holed up with someone for long periods of time, and that's really quite unusual. We're not really meant to be with anyone 24/7 without getting a break. And so relationships can feel really strained. I've encountered several people who are ditching the booze while their partner isn't, and that can create all kinds of tensions. One woman was telling me that it feels almost as if her partner is a little bit nervous, a little bit scared that maybe, he's losing his drinking buddy. And this is definitely a thing, there's all these different dynamics when people stop drinking. Someone's partner actually sort of said to them, well, shouldn't you have consulted me first? Absolutely not is the answer. You know, this is one thing that you do for yourself. You wouldn't consult your partner, you know, at great length. If the doctor had told you you had an allergy and you had to stop eating whatever it is, bananas, you wouldn't have a long conversation about whether you should stop eating bananas. It's a given. It's that's what it is. And if you wanted to become a vegan, you wouldn't be having a long debate about it with someone else to get their opinion. You're doing this for you. And I think that's super important to remember that if you're deciding right now that you want to ditch the booze, or maybe you've been sober for ages, but you really want to cement that, I don't know, that sort of sobriety, really make it solid for yourself, then just remember all over again that this is for you. It's 100% non-negotiable and totally personal to you. Later on down the line, you can, you know, have conversations and debates and discussions, and who knows, perhaps you'll inspire someone else, including your own partner or your family. But in the early days, it's only yours. Own this and make it yours, because I've seen it happen so many times that people go all great guns, they've really made their decision, they're going to ditch the booze, and it's day two, their partner offers them a drink, and they just kind of quake and give in. And it's because they haven't prepped, and they haven't kind of really got that strong sense of, I'm doing this for me, because I'm worth it, and you really, really are. And as we know, of course, what I talk about all the time is that it's about so much more than just not drinking. The not drinking is the start. And then it becomes about you, you know, your growth, your expansion, just everything becoming better. Optimum health and well-being into the future, we hope. It becomes so much more. It's so worth doing. If you're listening to this and you've been sober 4 years, then you know what I mean. You absolutely know what I mean. But it might be that you have another, you know, something else you want to work on now, because that's the great thing. We kind of unpeel these layers and then we're able to start focusing on something else. Anyway, so I'll be bringing you that interview on NLP. Within the Sober Club, we've got a fantastic little session that Joe and Andy did just for Sober Club members, where we learn how to really anchor a feeling and a memory, so that we can use that experience whenever we, you know, whenever we have kind of cravings and unwanted thoughts, and, you know, that pesky inner critic that comes in and tells you that you really aren't good enough. Talking of optimum health and well-being, some of you may have seen, if you're on social media, that I was interviewed by Simon Chappell. Of course, Simon is a coach with Annie Grace and is the author of a book and runs a big group. And we did an interview that I think Simon's put on YouTube, so you can pick up the link to it. And it was all about optimum health and well-being. And it was great to be able to chat. I was really, really pleased that Simon invited me to speak on this, because there isn't enough out there, I don't think, about really focusing on health and well-being in the early stages of ditching the booze, because without any shadow of doubt, it makes it so much easier for you. So have a listen to that interview. I'll give you some really, really specific, simple tips and ideas and things that you can do if you're in the early stages, or if you're solid in your sobriety, but you just want to get healthier. I mean, who doesn't, you know, at this point in time, who doesn't want to focus on health? I'm becoming kind of exhausted, really, by this is why I'm trying not to watch too much mainstream media. I think it can be it's terrible for your mental health. But, you know, I am just exhausted with the constant focus on illness. And then, of course, we have to respect what's going on. I get that completely. But what I would love to see is more emphasis on people taking responsibility and doing what they can to boost their immunity, to do the bits they know they can do for themselves. And that's often about making choices. And I am a really big believer in the power of getting out in sunlight. I know that's not possible for everyone right now, but if it is possible for you and you can get out in sunlight and get some vitamin D, then absolutely go for it. And if not, you might want to consider supplementation, because vitamin D has been absolutely shown to be really critical, actually, in immunity, as has vitamin C, of course. And there are, you know, there's a bunch of other things. But I just think now is a fantastic time, if you haven't before, to just take responsibility, take stock, really, just have a good look at what's going on. Because you, most of us kind of know, our kind of gut instinct tells us what we're doing wrong and what we're doing right. Just like we have that voice in our head that says, this is not okay. Drinking every day is not okay. The 3 a.m. voice that tells us it's not authentic with who we are and it's not going to go to a happy place. Some of us have got that little voice, maybe not to the same extent, but a little voice that creeps in and says, you know what, you're actually eating too many donuts, or you're piling on too many pounds. You can actually pull back from this, make a different choice, or whatever it might be. So, yeah, I just encourage everyone to really try and focus on what they can do for their own optimum health and well-being. And that comes in for, that counts for emotional health too, of course. If you aren't already, have some time in your day when you take some time out for some kind of reflection. If you already meditate, that's fantastic. If you know how to practice mindfulness, that's great. If you're completely new to all of this, it might just mean going for a walk, but don't listen to music. Just go for a walk and just breathe. Or it might mean just sitting and perhaps have a meditation or an audio tape going in your head, an audio app. There's loads of ways of doing this, but it kind of brings you back to the present moment. And right now, that's a pretty good thing to do, because the future feels very tricky and uncertain. And I heard a psychologist talking about the fact that that's why so many of us are having a lot more dreams and remembering our dreams, and the dreams seem really weird. And partly it's because our unconscious minds are trying to process this uncertainty. So, you know, they're working overtime to kind of try and make some sense of what's going on. So having some time, even if it's 5 minutes, just set a timer, have 5 minutes where you just reflect inwards, you just go within rather than kind of being in panic mode and fear mode and all of that stuff. So check out the interview with Simon Chappell on YouTube. You might find that really interesting if you're interested in health and well-being and where it meets sobriety. I'm guessing you are, otherwise you probably wouldn't be listening to this. And also, if you haven't already heard it, I was the guest on the Love Sober podcast last week with Mandy and Kate. So we had a really good chat last week. I had some fantastic response, by the way, from the podcast last week with Dr. Arik Sigman. I think that really resonated with a lot of people about just giving us permission, I suppose the word might be, as those of us who are parents, giving us permission to model the behaviour that we want and to tell our kids exactly what we think. You know, that's not the same as laying down the law, but we can absolutely make it clear what our beliefs are and share our own experience. And I think that that was quite encouraging for a lot of parents. And to hear the facts that that Arik stated, when things are factual, I think, kids and teenagers are more interested to listen if they know that, you know, there's an actual sort of scientific report that says this. So I got a great response from that. And I've got another couple of interviews with Arik that I'll make sure you know. They're not for the podcast, but I'll make sure you know how to access them, particularly if you're parents. You might find that really interesting. On today's show, we're going to be talking with a really interesting guy, Ewan McLennan, who is a herbalist, a medical herbalist. And he does some work with pucker teas. It's a thing, isn't it? When people ditch the booze, they suddenly discover all these amazing other drinks that they'd forgotten about, you know, great coffee, amazing herbal teas and kombuchas, all kinds of drinks that we'd sort of hadn't really bothered experiencing before. I didn't really used to drink anything else when I was drinking wine. It was just wine and then water because I felt I had to, and the odd coffee. And I didn't, there wasn't room for anything else. So actually, it's amazing to be able to expand. But Ewan is not just talking about teas. The conversation is... it's really about all kinds of immune, you know, the way nature has provided us with stuff to boost our immunity and our health and well-being. So I hope you enjoy this. It's Ewan McLennan.
We're talking herbs and amazing teas as well, by the way. We have Ewan McLennan, who is Herbal and Sustainability Director at Pucker Herbs and also medical herbalist at a London-based NHS practice. Ewan, thank you so much for being a guest. Really appreciate your time.
You're very welcome. Lovely to join you.
Yeah, tell us what a Herbal and Sustainability Director does.
Oh, it came about in a strange manner. So I started off life as a lawyer working in the city in London and decided that's not really what I wanted to do with my rest of my life. So I went back and I studied medical sciences and particularly how botanical medicines are used to treat humans. And whilst I was lecturing, after I finished my degree course, I started lecturing at some London universities. I was teaching pathology, clinical medicine, diagnosis of illness and things like that. And I was approached by Pucker, which is a tea and herbal company, about joining them. And my role there has grown to look after the education side of Pucker, the clinical research side, how we make our beautiful teas and our herbal supplements, etc. And then also the sustainability and some of the legal bits as well. So I'm a busy guy these days.
I mean, we know about Pucker herbs, of course, and Pucker teas, and we absolutely love them. For anyone who's not aware, just tell us about, you know, Pucker and the sort of extensive work that they do, because they've massively grown as a brand. And, you know, it really isn't just the packet of tea anymore, is it?
No, when I moved back into the commercial world working with Pucker, it's not something I ever intended to do. And the reason I did that was because I just fell in love with the purpose behind the company. So Pucker was established in 2001 by two co-founders, Tim and Seb, and they had a very strong view of what they wanted to do in the world. And that was to reintroduce people to nature and the benefits of plants and help their lives to be healthier and happier, essentially. And we've grown from those two people up to now having, you know, 100 and something people working in the company. And we have invested hugely in trying to grow ourselves into being a centre for herbal expertise. So we have clinical researchers, we work with universities, laboratories, medical schools around Britain and more within the rest of the world. We have an education department with learning courses that people can come in and understand more about their health, their immunity, their reaction to the world and what should make them healthier and happier. And we make everything, make sure it's all organic and good for people, and also that we use the very best herbs that we can find around the world.
Because, you know, I mean, it must be said for anyone who may not have even kind of thought about this before, but, you know, not all teas are created equal, are they? You can have a cup of tea and you can have a cup of tea, and it can be wildly different in terms of, you know, ingredients and provenance and how good it is for you, really.
Yeah, that's totally true. And that's one of the things we're all about. So one, where's your stuff grown? How's it sourced? And how do you look after the farmers who are working in India or other places that are a long way from your kitchen or your sitting room where you're enjoying your tea? And how do you make sure that the conditions they work in are good and fair? How do you make sure that they're not using pesticides and other kinds of weed killers in the soil that come through into your cup of tea? How do you make sure that the level of active constituents that are in those teas, so if you're taking peppermint for a sore tummy, how do you make sure it's got the right amount of menthol? Because whether you're using pharmacopeial grade or practitioner grade herbs like we do, or whether you're just using culinary grades, they'll have wild differences in the level of oils and other active constituents you get in the tea, which means one, in terms of your health benefit, you're going to get much more, but also in terms of taste, because most of those constituents taste yummy, it's going to taste much better as well.
Yeah. Talk to us about herbs then, and you know, how amazing our body can be, the way it reacts to viruses, you know, very important word right now, and bacteria. You know, how can our own defense mechanisms work to you know, really build our immune system? And where do herbs come into this?
So it's a quite an involved question, isn't it? I suppose if we look at our immune system first, everybody has an immune system, and that's what protects our internal environment from harmful aspects that may be in the external environment, and how we decide what's allowed into our body and is used and what should not be allowed into our body. And if it does get into our body, how do we make sure it doesn't cause us harm? And that immune system is built up of lots of different layers. You've got the physical barrier, so like the skin and the mucous membranes. You've got chemical barriers like the acid in your tummy. You have then the cell parts of it, which are non-specific. They'll attack anything they don't recognize, or specific in that they have seen this cold virus or this coronavirus before, and they will attack that because they recognize it as something that's bad for you. And what we want to do as much as possible is to move away from talking about boosting the immune system when we think there are lots of challenges in the external environment, and talk much more about how do we balance the immune system, and how do we make sure that the host, and that's your body and your mind as well, we understand more and more that's linked to health, how do we make sure that that is as robust and healthy as possible and supports a good, strong function of an immune system?
So where do we start then? What are the basics?
Well, I think the basics are to make sure that you understand what's good for you. I think that's a nice place to start, is to regard yourself as an individual, and what works for one person might not work as well for another person. So try to work out what fits with you, with your lifestyle, and what's sustainable for you. And then think about not just your immunity, but think about all of the other aspects of your life that support your immunity. So your diet, your lifestyle, your state of mind, how you're sleeping. You know, all of those are things that contribute to you having a strong immune function. And for example, we know now through fairly recent research, I think this came out about a year ago, that if you're not sleeping properly, then it's akin to overdrinking in the effect it has on your immune system. It stops certain types of or cells within your immune system called T cells from functioning properly. And they're the bits that activate all the other parts of our cell-related immune system as well. So all of these other aspects that you maybe not think about have a big impact on your ability to fight off infection.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about antiviral and antibacterial herbs then. You know, lots of them are things that we've sort of already heard of. You know, we've all heard of echinacea, and there are others that we're not so familiar with. So talk us through some of the sort of obvious ones that you would recommend and that are relatively easily accessible for us. Because I think sometimes when we talk about herbal stuff, people can get a bit freaked out and think, oh, I've no idea how to access that, how to take it. You know, I can't start boiling up potions. You know, it can all seem a little bit frightening at first. So can you sort of make it as simple as you can for us?
I'll do my very best. I think a really nice place to start is to think that food and medicine in Western society have been so removed from each other. We think about medicine being used to treat illness, and we think about food being used to give you energy and keep you functioning day to day. But if you look at loads of other cultures around the world, they don't separate the two of them. And in some ways, herbs are a fascinating bridge between foods and medicine. They are just condensed versions of micronutrients. So there's nothing scary about them at all. What you're trying to do with herbal medicine is quite often not just tackle the disease and use an antiviral herb when you're scared there's a virus out there, although there are some of those that do that. You're also trying to think about how you're using that herb to holistically look after the health of that person. So instead of treating the illness, you treat a little bit more the person, and that can have quite different health outcomes. I will mention echinacea just because you have mentioned that before, and that's a very popular herb, one that people can access quite easily. It contains compounds that we know interact with your immune system. So one set of compounds are called alkylamides, and that's if you take quite strong echinacea, it can have an anesthetic effect in your mouth. That's the alkylamides in it. and it also contains other immune active compounds, which are called polysaccharides, which are like a long sugar chain. And we know that echinacea has an effect to modulate your immune system. So if your immune system is overactive, it tends to reduce the activity of the immune system. If it's underactive, it tends to increase the level at which your immune system is functioning. So it's an immune modulator or an immune balancer. And that's easy to take. You can take it as a tea. You can take it as a supplement. You know, either one of those is going to help you.
Mm, great. What about elderberries then, while we're on the ease?
So elderberry is one of my favorite ones. I rather like elderberry because it grows in the UK and Northern Europe very well. You'll see it in hedgerows all around the countryside, and even growing in places like where I live in London. And the really interesting thing about elderflower is that you can use the flowers and you can also use the berry. Both of those have antiviral activity. Both of those interact with your immune system. And if I can do just a tiny bit of virology, just to talk about how viruses work. Viruses are not the cleverest of little organisms. They can't make babies on their own. They have an inability to reproduce. So the whole goal of a virus when it enters your system is to find a way to make babies. And how it does this is it finds your own cell, which has a reproductive mechanism. It climbs inside that cell, and then it hijacks the reproductive system of that cell to create thousands, tens of thousands of little viruses within that cell. And then the cell will explode and those viruses will be released around your body. And it will continue doing that again and again and again until your immune system gets on top of it and stops it from working properly. And to go back to elderberry, what elderberry does very interestingly is it prevents the virus from binding or attaching to your cell in order to get inside. And it also affects the ability of the virus to drill a hole into your cell essentially and climb inside. So it has a direct antiviral activity.
Yeah. So again, as you say, you can get that. I mean, Pukka Herbs have got the organic elderberry and echinacea tea, is that right?
Yeah, we do an elderberry and echinacea tea, and we also do an elderberry syrup, which has ginger and thyme and manuka honey and all those kind of lovely things in there. It's good for kiddies as well, because they quite like the taste of it.
Yeah. And now, obviously, you know, we mentioned vitamin C. Elderberries are a great natural source of vitamin C. What about, what are your thoughts on taking extra vitamin C to support our immune function?
I think it can be a really good thing to do. So vitamin C doesn't actually attack the virus or anything like that. Vitamin C is what we call a cofactor in your immune system. It helps your immune cells to work properly. And when you are infected with an illness, your body will use up vitamin C very, very quickly. So it can be very helpful when you're unwell to take vitamin C to support immune function. But there are different types of vitamin C. So what I like to advise people is to try and take natural vitamin C. So either through your diet, or if you're going to take a supplement, try and take a natural form of vitamin C rather than just an ascorbic acid, which is a synthetic kind of creation of vitamin C.
And then what about the, you know, the sort of adaptogens? Tell us what your thoughts on adaptogens are.
It's a totally fascinating area of herbs and of science and medicine as well. So adaptogens have developed into a bit of a buzzword, and they come from Eastern European and Russian research that was done decades ago. And you're using herbs or other substances that are non-harmful to the body to have a variety of effects on different aspects of how your body works to have a beneficial outcome. And they essentially help your body to adapt to stress. And one of the ways they were first discovered was in relation to exercise, because exercise is a stress on your body. It's a physical stress in your body. And it seems if you take adaptogenic herbs, they can increase your resistance to that stress, and therefore they can help you to perform better in exercise. Similarly, if you're ill, that is also a stress on your body as well. And when you put a stress in your body, it uses up your reserves. And adaptogens help to prolong the period under which you can undergo stress as well. So you're basically strengthening your stress response to whatever is a stressor to your body.
Now, I mean, a couple of the adaptogens that I've heard of are things like medicinal sort of mushrooms, as the expression goes. So things like shaga. Would you agree that mushrooms are beneficial, those kinds of mushrooms?
Yeah, mushrooms have got a very long history of use, centuries of use, particularly in traditional Chinese medicine for supporting an immunity. And in fact, they're used for lots of different aspects. The reishi mushroom, the mitake mushroom, shiitake mushroom, all of those, they contain compounds which are called beta-glucans. And remember when I was mentioning about echinacea a little while ago, one of the compounds I mentioned were polysaccharides. Well, that's something that mushrooms have in common with echinacea. They both contain polysaccharides. And polysaccharides within mushrooms are called beta-glucans. And they stimulate the production of certain types of immune cells, and one type of non-specific immune cell that just attack anything that they recognize as being wrong in your body have a very exciting name of being called natural killer cells, and they're one of the particular cells in your immune system that beta glucans create more of when you take them in.
Interesting. How would you take them then in supplement form? I mean, we wouldn't be looking for teas there, would we?
Not at the moment. There aren't very many teas with them. They can have a slightly funky taste when you put too much of it into a tea, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
So we'd usually take them as a supplement, a dried powder of one sort or another. Or in Chinese medicine, they'd decoct them. So they'd boil them in a pan and reduce them down almost like you'd make a gravy or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's probably the best way to take them.
Yeah. And what about this fabulous word andrographis? Is that how you say it from Ayurvedic medicine?
Yeah, that's probably one of the best researched herbs we have out there for supporting immune function. It's interesting because it's probably one of the least recognized herbs, possibly because of the very complicated name Andrographis paniculata.
Yeah. I didn't even try and say that, but
it's a bit of a mouthful. Andrographis is an Ayurvedic herb, and Ayurveda is the Indian form of traditional medicine. It's a very, very learned science that goes back a long time in human culture. Andrographis contain compounds called diterpene lactones. They are called, more specifically, andrographolides. And they have been shown to reduce the severity and duration of upper respiratory tract infections. And we've recently published some academic papers with Southampton University to look at this, because we've been doing some research with GP surgeries around the southwest of England, about 30 of them, where we've been asking GPs to, instead of prescribing antibiotics straight away, where they think it's fit, they could prescribe andrographis instead and see how that affects the use of antibiotics and recovery from illness with patients. And it's been a really interesting study, actually, because one, we're looking at how andrographis can affect health outcomes in people with respiratory infections, but we're also looking at the tendency of conventional medical practitioners to prescribe herbs rather than antibiotics, which is addressing one of the big crises we have in the world, which is the resistance that antibiotics are creating for bacteria.
That's interesting. What is the current sort of state of affairs then within the medical profession and providing herbs? I mean, we know that with homeopathy, you know, there's a big old fight going on as to, you know, what we should and shouldn't be allowing generally. So what's the case with prescribing herbs or with encouraging herbs?
It's a very complicated picture, actually, because general practitioners and those working in secondary care, so in hospitals as well, their medical education does not include much in the way of teaching about herbs and natural medicines. I teach a few from Imperial College University who come in and sit in the surgery with me, because I work in an NHS practice every Friday, and I teach them a little bit about natural medicines, and they're incredibly interested in that. But that's a very small percentage of the medical population that have any interest or knowledge in it. Actually, more have interest than they have knowledge. And that's quite a contrast to the patient population, where a lot of patients are very interested in natural medicines.
Yeah.
And they use natural medicines a lot. So when patients come in and ask doctors, you know, I have back pain. Should I be using turmeric or should I be using devil's claw for it? I'm getting respiratory infection. Should I be using andrographis or echinacea? Doctors, nurses can't really answer those questions because from their point of view, they don't have the training and they also don't have access to the evidence base.
Yeah.
So there's no real war, I don't think. But I think for a medical practitioner, it's difficult to say, A, they're effective, B, they're safe, and C, that they won't interact with other medications, which I understand, which is why we're working so hard at Pucker to invest in research and education so that people can understand more about the benefits, because they are part of our human culture. And at the end of the day, so many of the medicines we use in primary and secondary care are herbal based.
Of course, of course. Now you mentioned, you know, not interacting with other medicines, and that is an important one, isn't it? I mean, most of us have heard the sort of warnings, if you like, around taking something like St. John's Wort if you're also on antidepressants. I don't know if I'm even right about that one, but what are the sort of basic concerns that we should be aware of?
You're absolutely spot on. Taking St. John's Wort with other selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors would not be a good thing to do because you can develop conditions called things like serotonin syndrome. Mm. So there are certain herbs that you do need to be very careful of. And most of them are ones where they interact with anticoagulant medication, really, or they affect the way in which the liver will process other medications. So they can lead to you getting too much of a medicine or too little of a medicine because it is cleared more quickly. But to be perfectly honest, in the main, there are not that many interactions with the kind of herbs that you're going to buy over the counter. Herbal companies tend not to sell medicines where they are going to get loads of complaints from doctors or from patients. So I think most people are fairly sensible. I think it's just if you are on a lot of medications or you do have underlying serious health conditions, you need to talk to either a qualified herbalist or to your doctor about, you know, what you're taking.
Yeah, absolutely. Now there'll be a lot of people listening to this. I work with a lot of people who've ditched the booze and have made that decision to remove alcohol from their lives, or they're in the process of doing so. And as you'll be well aware, you know, that can be a time that your body's all over the place. You kind of need to recalibrate everything, and all your kind of neurotransmitters are big time messed up. So are there any, I mean, I realize we're speaking generically, we're not personalizing this, but is there anything that you would recommend that people in that situation can take, or any particular teas that would just help them with that balancing of the brain chemistry in those early weeks?
Yes. I think one of the most well-known herbs for supporting people when they're, because coming off alcohol, changing your lifestyle, we were talking before about adaptogens and we were talking about stressors to the body. This would be a form of stress to the body. It takes, it's a change in your internal and the kind of external environment that's coming into your body. So ashwagandha is a, I suppose, loosely termed as a type of Indian ginseng. It's again an Ayurvedic herb. It's used as a tonic, so it strengthens the body. And it also helps your body to adapt to those type of stresses. And you mentioned before about the neurological aspects of coming off alcohol. Again, that's one of the places where ashwagandha would be very strongly implicated. It works with certain types of neurotransmitters to reduce the heightened response of the nervous system.
In what form would you take that then, in like a tincture, or is it possible to get that in a tea form?
So I would take that. You can take it in a tea. We do a tea, actually, a lovely blend called Peace Tea, which has a little bit of hemp in it, so a little bit of marijuana in it, and it has a ashwagandha and spearmint and chamomile.
Oh, wow. So I haven't seen that one. Amazing.
It's brand new.
Oh,
just hot off
great.
The press. And that's a beautiful one, because it's, you know, the ritual of taking tea is also taking time to yourself. It's a relaxing thing to do. And when you're coming off alcohol, sometimes it's the withdrawal aspects of taking something upon which your body has been depending. But there's also a very strong habitual aspect to reaching for a drink at certain times of the day.
Definitely.
Or evening.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you can replace that with healthier habits, such as drinking a cup of tea, it may sound a little bit pejorative to say that, you know, put your wine aside or put your vodka aside and have a cup of tea instead. But it does fill the habit.
Well, particularly if it's a really fabulous, fabulous tea, you know, there's a big difference, as we were saying before, they're not all equal. And you know, with something like your peace tea that you've just described, it fits beautifully that phrase that I keep using at the moment, which is keep the ritual, but change the ingredients. So you absolutely can set aside a really nice mug or glass, can't you? And have that and know that you're kind of doing yourself some good.
I love that phrase. Keep the ritual, but change
the ingredients. Yeah,
I'll use that myself.
You can have that. Okay. Well, I love the sound of that. Okay. So let's just think just back to the you know, the topic that is of course on everybody's minds, the coronavirus and our immunity and our well-being. What would you recommend for someone sort of brand new to all of this, and they do have the opportunity perhaps to get to a supermarket or to a health food store where they can pick up a few bits and pieces? What would be the sort of, I don't know, little kitchen cupboard kit that you would suggest people start with?
So first off, I'd say to listeners, you know, one needs to follow government advice in terms of protecting yourself against the virus, and in terms of understanding that we don't have a cure or a treatment for this virus at the moment. What we're talking about in terms of advice with herbs would be strengthening your immune function, making your body as robust as possible and able to tackle the stresses that are going on, and just looking after yourself as an individual, because the stronger you are, the more difficult it will be for you to be invaded. And if you are invaded, then the more likelihood there is of you fighting that invasion off.
Yeah.
And if you want to do that, you could, let's look at some very simple things. So ginger is a really interesting one. Ginger you can get in a tea, and dry ginger, absolutely great. It has some antiviral activity. It also has anti-inflammatory activity as well. And there are some really interesting studies from places like Iran, which have been looking at how ginger has been used in intensive care units to treat people who are on pneumonia and reduce the use of intensive care. And very interesting and very promising results there.
So, but surely, let me just ask quickly, sorry, but surely a ginger tea wouldn't have enough sort of ginger to actually make any difference, would it? Isn't it just a nice taste?
No, well, it has two different effects. The antiviral properties and the pungency of ginger will come through in tea as well.
Right.
So the oils that sit within tea, things like ginger oils and shoggles, they will transfer into water very, very easily. If you're thinking about supplements versus tea, generally supplements are going to be stronger. You're taking the whole herb there rather than a water extract of the herb, which you get with tea. But if you're talking about trying to get people to take something regularly during the day, then many people will be more likely to go into a regime of drinking teas than they would taking supplements. So it's a bit of a balance as to what will work for you. And also in history, one must remember a lot of medicine was given in the form of tea. So you can make tea stronger by adding two tea bags. If you say have 2 grams of herb in each tea bag, that's 4 grams of ginger that you're taking in, which is a reasonable amount.
Great.
So it's a good culinary one anyway, ginger. But then I would also, I'd be looking at the balancing the herbs we were talking about before. If you take some mushrooms, which support maybe more long-term immunity and your resistance to infection, alongside andrographis at times when you're particularly challenged, those would be two of the things I do. So I'd be looking to support underlying immunity and strengthen the body. And then I'd be looking at taking things like andrographis when I thought I was going into a position of challenge, or I felt like I had the first symptoms of any type of infection.
Great. I'm guessing things like turmeric are good as well.
Yeah, so turmeric can be used for loads of different purposes in herbal medicine. It's not absolutely specific on immunity, to be perfectly honest. It's not one of the ones, if a patient came into us saying, and they've got an upper respiratory tract infection, here, take turmeric. But it does have a very potent anti-inflammatory activity. And part of your immune response is to create inflammation throughout the body. So, you know, aspirin makes you feel better when you have an illness, because it acts as an anti-inflammatory and antipyretic, so it brings down your temperature. turmeric can act in some of the same way as that as well. It's almost like a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, like ibuprofen or aspirin.
Yeah, got it. Wow, amazing. Thank you so much for your tips and knowledge. And just remind us then where we can get the pucker teas. I mean, I think they're actually everywhere now, aren't they? So they, you know, they're available in sort of supermarkets, health food stores, and online. Am I right about that?
Yeah, all over the so at the moment, probably one of the easiest things to go on to online retailers like Amazon is probably the easiest way to get hold of things. But otherwise, yes, all of the teas are in major supermarkets and health food stores, and the supplements you'll find as well.
Great. Ewan, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. It's been great, absolutely fascinating to talk to you. Thank you.
A huge pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thanks, Ewan. I hope pucker herbs are going to enter my platinum awards. I'd love to be able to bring you more information about pucker. They're a really fascinating company. They do some really amazing stuff. Don't forget then, I'm on that interview, that YouTube interview with Simon about Optimum Wellness. And coming up in the next few weeks, we have that interview with Joe and Andy, who are neuro-linguistic programming experts and trainers. We're going to talk about how you can use simple tips and techniques within NLP to change unwanted habits. So that's going to be a great one. I've got an interview lined up with Julia Carson, who's the author of Sober Positive, and a whole bunch of stuff. Don't forget, if there is someone that you would like me to interview, please feel free to make a suggestion. I don't know if I'll be able to get them on the podcast, but I can certainly give it a try. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. If you're on Instagram, at Janie Lee Grace. Facebook, it's at Janie Lee Grace Loves. I have a free Facebook group for those people who are interested in natural health and well-being. It's called Imperfectly Natural Self-Care. You're very welcome to come and join that Facebook group. And obviously, if you're interested in the Sober Club, it's thesoberclub.com. There's a whole bunch of free blogs and various things there. And then obviously you can look into the membership if you want support and accountability and the online course, which is part of it. Don't forget, I have a free PDF, kind of mini ebook at the moment, which is called How to Get and Stay Sober During Lockdown. And that gives you some real concrete tips and ideas as to what you can focus on to kind of retrain some of those thoughts that are going on right now. So if you'd like a copy of that, if you'd like to download that PDF, if you look in the show notes of this podcast, you'll get a link. Or if you go to thesoberclub.com and click on blog, you'll see the link there to get the mini ebook, How to Get and Stay Sober During Lockdown. Have a good week. Keep in touch. If you are concerned, if you are struggling, reach out for help. I said this in a podcast a few weeks ago, and a few people did actually respond and say, you know, well, you said ask for help, and so that's what I'm doing. And that's exactly what you need to do. There will be people out there who can support you. Absolutely reach out for help, whatever your situation is. Don't do this on your own. You know, you and those thoughts that are self-sabotaging you, that is not a good mix right now. You need to, honor your own needs and your own thoughts and your own feelings, and reach out for help, and know that you are absolutely worth it, and you can find your tribe and connect with other people who feel the same way, and people are a few steps ahead of you. I think that's so important. That's what I love about the Sober Club. We've got people who are on day one, and there are people who are 6 years sober, further on than I am, and we all need someone ahead of us, you know, as well as being able to support those who are coming up. So I think the community aspect is really important. So whatever it takes, find your tribe. There's so much help and support available now. Thank you so much for listening. I'll look forward to seeing you same time next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability, and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.